Friends, I'm happy to announce that Straight Talk has partnered with Blue Line Roasting Company to bring you delicious coffee to enjoy while you listen to this podcast. Blue Line Roasting Company also serves our first responders by giving a portion of all net proceeds to numerous organizations who support them. Order today at BlueLineRoasting.com. That's BlueLineRoasting.com. And don't forget, you join the Straight Shooter VIP Club, you receive a free coffee sample and a mug, plus invitations to private podcast events. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Straight Talk Podcast. I am your host, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. It's good to be back in the saddle. I was away for a little bit for some much-needed R&R, recharge, and ready to go. I want to make a couple of quick comments on some things that have happened over the last week or so politically out of Washington, D.C. One is that Nikki Haley finally dropped out of the race for the Republican nomination for President of the United States. I talked about that enough on this podcast, about how she needed to do it just to save her, just to save face, save her honor, her integrity, her credibility, what little was left. She was being used as a tool by the anti-Trumpers, propping her up with major cash. And I think those people knew that she wasn't going to beat Donald Trump, but they didn't care. They were trying to do as much and inflict as much damage as they could on President Trump. That was their real goal. I don't know if they accomplished that or not, but they used her. And she, you know, she went all in. She risked everything that she has built over the last, 25 years or so in politics. You know, you only have so much when you venture into these waters of elected politics. You have your honor, you have your courage, you have your integrity, your credibility, your word, and you got to guard those things closely. Because I used to say, you know, I ran in 4 elections for sheriff, won them all, but one of the things that I was hoping to salvage, even if I wouldn't have won, I wanted to salvage my reputation, my honor, my integrity, my credibility, and my character. I didn't want that in tatters after losing a race or even after winning one. That was important to me. So she risked all of that on behalf of somebody else. I think she was getting bad advice. That's kind of evident. But to allow yourself to be used by somebody who has nothing to lose themselves. These big donors that were financing her, they just pull up stakes after this and they just move on. Most people couldn't even name any of those. They're anonymous. At least they get to operate in anonymity. Who the donor, the big donors were, the donor class. So she threw it all away. Her political career, as far as I'm concerned, is over. I don't think she's of any use anymore within the Republican Party. I don't think she is anyway. And, you know, her word's no good. She said, she took a pledge before God and country. If you watch those debates, you saw it. The question was asked, if you don't win, will you support the eventual nominee for the Republican presidential race? And she said yes. She gave her word. Your word means something. It's one of those things that, you know, you're left standing with if all else fails. People can look and go, you know what? She's a woman of her word. She's got honor and she's got integrity. So then in the end, she did a flip-flop and says, well, I, and all of a sudden she gets into the word salad. When she was asking questions on some of the Sunday talk shows, she gets into this long drawn-out word salad stuff that basically said, no, I'm not going to keep my word. And then I thought, too, when she made her announcement that she was suspending, what I can't get over, suspending her campaign. Nobody says I'm going to quit my run for whatever. You're going to suspend as if the suspension can be lifted at some point. That's what a suspension means. It's temporary. You get suspended from school, you're not expelled. If you get suspended for a couple days from work for rules violations, you're not fired. You don't get paid for a couple days and then you come back and you resume activity. And so I don't get this suspend my campaign. Well, then I thought she acted like a petulant little child the way she came off. She came off angry. She came off bitter. And the thing that struck me was she says it's up to Donald Trump to convince the people that supported me to get on board. He's already done that. He doesn't owe Nikki Haley and her supporters anything. That'd be nice to have them. You don't kick them in the rear end. And sure, you try to cultivate them. But she could have helped and said, I gave my word, and my word means something to me, and I said I would support the eventual nominee, and that's Donald Trump, and I'm here today to say that I support him and will do whatever I can to help him become president of the United States again. That's the honorable way to handle this stuff, as hard as it is. I know it's hard for her. She got a rear end handed to her at every turn. She was the one that wanted the one-on-one with Donald Trump. Remember, she was the one asking other people to drop out, and she was looking forward to a one-on-one with Donald Trump, and she got it. She got the one-on-one, and she got trounced. Bow gracefully. I know it's hard, but at least you can walk away with your head held high. She, like I said, she came out of there angry. She came off as petulant. Well, I have to do this, but I don't want to. I'm going to make it difficult, and I'm going to, you know, the way she phrased some of the things that she said, or framed, I should say. You know, there was hidden meaning in there, and a lot of what she said. Well, anyway, she's gone. Good riddance. I used to have a lot of respect for Nikki Haley. You know, I read her book. It was about 5 years ago, but it was a good read. I'm going to say that. I learned a lot about Nikki Haley. I disagreed with some of the things that, you know, she talked about in the book. But nevertheless, I still came away with a lot of respect. That's gone. And not just from me, I bet from many of you. There'll be respect for her anymore. So anyway, good riddance, Nikki. We don't need to hear from you. And I hope to God she's not given a chance to speak at the Republican National Convention. We don't need people like that, ladies and gentlemen. She's an apostate. Those are the people, you know, I'm fond of saying this. We need to get the wrong people off the bus, the right people on the bus, the right people in the right seats, and then we move the bus forward. You can't skip any of those steps, and you can't skip that process. Because if you have the wrong people on board, it's not going to work. And we have to have the, I don't want to say, so I won't. I was going to say the courage. It's not an issue of courage. But we have to have the, you know, we got to stand strong in terms of getting the wrong people off the bus. That's a big problem for the conservative / Republicans. We got too many of the wrong people on the bus. And then the right ones that we have that are currently there are not in the right seats. Speaking of being in the right seats, I want to make sense of this. You know, people say things sometimes, and I don't know if they really know what is meant by it. That includes me. Like, what does he mean in the right seats? Mitch McConnell. He's not only the wrong person on the bus, but he's in the wrong seat. he finally announced, finally, that he would not seek the party leader in the Senate. Right now it's the minority leader. Could be the majority leader if they retake the Senate, but that's jumping the gun a little bit. But he announced he would not seek to be the leader of the Republicans in the Senate come, you know, January of 2025, when the new Congress is seated. And that'll be in January of 2025. A long time in coming. Why that body continued to, especially after the midterms, they had a chance. They had a chance in 2016 where they voted him in again. Because, you know, once you get any seats, you just stay there forever. Except now in the House of Representatives for the GOP. Seems like they're playing, want to play musical chairs with the speakership. And that's, you know, they get to do that. That's the rules. They get to elect their leadership. The people don't get to vote. We get to vote who goes to Congress. But that's all that's the only role we play in this thing in terms of their leadership within those bodies. I get it. I don't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem with some of the people that they put in there. And one of them has been Mitch McConnell. You've heard me rip on that guy ever since this podcast started. He needs to go. He needed to go some time ago. So now he's relinquished that and said he's not going to seek to be the leader of the party in the Senate moving forward. He'll finish out this term through November, and then he's moving on. Good. Another guy off the bus. The wrong people on the bus. We have to get the wrong people off the bus. He's another one. Good. Gone. Now, what becomes important when you get the wrong people off the bus is to make sure you get the right people on the bus to replace them and then get them in the right seats. So now one of those seats is, right now, Senate Minority Leader, GOP. Two names have surfaced. And when I heard the names, I said, here we go. We're not going to get the right people in the right seats with what I'm seeing so far. So there's been two people who've announced that they would seek to be the party leader in the Senate. One is John Cornyn of Texas, and the other is John Thune. I think he's from North Carolina, but don't hold me to that. Those are not the right people in the right seats. Those are longtime insider establishment guys. Okay? Establishment guys. The old guard. I'm tired of this hierarchical next man up. And it's been man in terms of the Republican Party. They've never had a, and I'm not suggesting they need to. I don't play the identity politics BS. But they've never had a woman, they've never had a minority in those positions. Any position of leadership, even like the whip or the, you know, the some of the other leadership positions within the party that they have. It's the old guard. Even Mitch McConnell, when he made his announcement, he said, it's time for the next generation. He said that. Of leaders within the Republican Party in the Senate. That's not John Cornyn and it's not John Thune. That's the establishment. The old guard. And you wonder why nothing will change for the Republicans? You wonder why they continue to vote for all this massive spending when they claim to be the party of limited government, but they don't behave that way? Lower taxes? Stop stepping on the Second Amendment? Speaking of the Second Amendment, if you recall, and I'm going to brag a little bit here on myself. I have a better memory than most people. If you recall, after Uvalde, that massacre that happened at that school, Uvalde, Texas, Mitch McConnell, under pressure. Said he was feeling the pressure. Told John Cornyn, and he named a couple other Republicans. He said, get together with the Democrats who are calling for gun control after Uvalde, that knee-jerk stuff that happens after every mass shooting. And he said, work out something. See if you can work out some sort of gun control package. Yes, the Republicans did that. Instead of saying, no, get out of here with that. Here's what we need to do and come up with some other stuff that has nothing to do with stomping on the Second Amendment. And like I said this previously on this podcast, when Mitch McConnell put that group together to work with Democrats after Uvalde, I said, they do not have my permission under proxy to give away my Second Amendment rights. I'm not giving them those are individual rights. And they're God-given, and I'm not giving them the authority to act on my behalf in that way. I'm not giving my Second Amendment rights up. None, not one inch, not one ounce. Change the Constitution, amend the Constitution if you want to do it. And the left and the anti-gunners and the anti-Second Amendment people, they know that's an uphill climb, trying to amend the Constitution and change the Second Amendment. They know it's not going to happen. So they try to do it through the courts. They try to do it through arm twisting, shaming. Oh, you got blood on your hands because of Uvalde. I don't have blood on my hands for nothing. So you got John Cornyn, you got John Thune. That's not new blood, ladies and gentlemen. That is not the next generation for the GOP. And I'm not even going to talk about in terms of chronological age, but I say the next generation, but I don't necessarily mean younger, but a different set of eyes. They need to find, that body needs to find the most boat-rocking, anti-establishment, limited government, constitutional conservative that they can find to be their leader. That's who they need. I don't have a name right now. I'm not ready to throw any out there. Got a couple in mind, but I'm not ready to throw them out there. And it's not my say anyway. It's that Senate body. And so we'll have to see how this shakes out after the November election. Because some of those people, that could change. You might get some new blood in there. And they're never going to give an incoming freshman senator a leadership side. They're not going to do, I know this. Well, that's beside the point. We need to pressure them to not do this next man up. I'm tired of this next man up crap within the Republican Party. I'm tired of it. All you're going to get is some establishment guy who's just going to try to work together with the damn Democrats, who's going to cave on these spending packages, these omnibus and these continuing resolutions. They're going to continue to go along with the Democrats on that crap. They're going to continue with the reckless spending. And every time push comes to shove and they have a chance to draw a line in the sand on it, their knees buckle. So anyway, we'll see what happens there. But those two names, absolutely not. Turning the page. Israeli war, still in the news, still going on. And there's still pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu to go along with a ceasefire, and I say absolutely not. And I still want to know why, because old Vice President Harris came out last week and said, Israel should agree to a ceasefire. No. Here's what needs to happen. Vice President Harris, Joe Biden, Anthony Blinken, and others need to press Hamas for an unconditional surrender. An unconditional surrender, not a ceasefire. I don't understand why they're trying to pressure Israel. Israel didn't start this. Hamas did. And Israel's made it clear that this time they're going to annihilate and eviscerate and eliminate Hamas. And they're not taking no for an answer, nor should they. So I don't understand why there's all this, and even other, all these Arab nations, you know, that are at the table to try to broker a ceasefire. No, broker an unconditional surrender by Hamas. That should be the goal. Stop putting the pressure on Israel and start putting the pressure on Hamas. Lay down your arms and wave the white flag. An unconditional surrender. You know what? That's the quickest way to a ceasefire. An unconditional surrender by Hamas. Israel will stop. Okay, now let's sit down and work out a surrender agreement with Hamas. I don't understand this. Ceasefire? No, how about it? Look, Hamas, it's nearing the end anyway. This is not a stalemate. It's not one of those situations like Ukraine and Russia. It's kind of a stalemate a little bit. And you want to stop some of the carnage going on during the stalemate. There's no stalemate in Israel, in Gaza, in the West Bank. There's no stalemate. So back home on the same front with Israel, I'm seeing some of these things from these supporters of the Palestinians, and it's starting to nauseate. No, not just the chants and the, you know, waving the Palestinian flag and so on and so forth, but the ability of this pro-Palestinian movement to take to the streets and march and protest and raise hell. They snap their fingers, and next thing you know, several thousand people show up. Here, I'll give you some examples. I don't make stuff up. From PBS.org, tens of thousands have joined pro-Palestinian protests across the United States. Another from FightBackNews.org. Hundreds turn out in Milwaukee, my hometown, for solidarity with Palestine. Here's another one. Thousands join Washington, D.C. pro-Palestinian rally. Thousands. That's from TheIndependent.com. Here's from The Guardian. No Christmas as usual. Pro-Palestinian protesters demonstrate in U.S. cities. Here's another one. This goes on and on and on. But I don't want you to think that I'm, you know, using hyperbole when I say this pro-Palestinian movement here in the United States. From PalmBeachPulse.com, hundreds attend pro-Palestinian rally in West Palm Beach. Here's another one from Edition.CNN.com. About 300,000 people attend a pro-Palestinian rally in London. Here's another one from PresentEnterprise.com. Pro-Palestinian demonstrators protest outside of Biden's star-studded L.A. fundraiser. Okay, I think now you get my point. Here's the question. Where are the pro-Israel rallies? Where are they? There are none. Our side, the side that supports Israel, the right side, refuses to take to the streets in a show of solidarity, in a show of support for Israel with massive rallies. Not only could I not get, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm trying. I know you've heard me say this about trying. Winston Churchill said it's the most overused word in the English language. At some point, you must succeed at what you're doing, not just try. So I understand that. But I'm just one person. And we don't all have to descend on Washington, D.C. Right in our own towns, villages, cities, rallies, in support of Israel. We refuse, our side, and not just on this, We refuse to take to the streets and protest to support Israel. And not just that, on other issues too. We will not take to the streets while we, you know, we're busy. I'm tired of people being busy. Drop what you're doing. It's happened in history before. The people who fought for freedom in this, since the inception of this constitutional republic, they've dropped what they were doing and answered the call. The Revolutionary War, the farm, they left their farms, they left their families. The world wars, it's happened time and time and time again where people realize this is more important than what I have going on right now. And they did it. We don't have that sort of gumption anymore. Our side, we refuse to do it. 300,000 gathered in London in support of Palestine and Hamas. 300,000. Thousands gathered in some of these other ones here in the United States. I'm telling you, at a moment's notice, they could call for a protest tomorrow and at least 500 people would show up. At least, minimum, a couple hundred. If I called for a pro-Israel rally 2 weeks from now to give people time to prepare, I couldn't get several hundred showing up. I'm telling you right now. I couldn't. So that's why I say, well, I'm trying, because I'm not going to waste my time. But I went out. You know, like I said, I'm just one person. But everybody can do something. And that's my attitude. I could do something. And I purchased 2 Israeli flags. You know, the ones with the Star of David on it, the 2 blue stripes. I used one as a backdrop for all my TV appearances. Next to a U.S. flag. You know, they're kind of like, you know, we're working together. We're joined at the hip. The U.S. and Israel. I also put a Israeli flag decal on the back of my truck. Along with a U.S. flag. Both. The U.S. flag on top, underneath the Israeli flag. It's a show of support for Israel. I'm at least showing it. And, you know, some people said, well, you sure you want to do that? You know, you get your car damaged by, I don't care. I'm not going to hide like you folks. Well, yeah, I support them, but, you know, I want to keep my head down about it. No. They're not doing it. They're not hiding. Aren't you afraid to get your car damaged, you know, and people's, you know, kick your taillight out? I don't care. They better hope I'm not somewhere watching. Because if I see it, it's not going to turn out real well for them. If I see someone damage my vehicle. And I'm the type of person, I may park my vehicle somewhere, take my binoculars and go a block or two down and just watch. I'm that guy. So, you know, I started this nonprofit. I may have talked about it on this podcast. Rise Up Wisconsin. Go to riseupwisconsin.org. By the way, you know, this stuff, when you organize, it's a nonprofit. It's a 501c4. So it's registered and everything. It's organized, not just a Facebook page. Articles of incorporation and all that stuff. It takes work and money, 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 money. The ability of the left to raise money is uncanny. Our side, deep pockets, alligator arms. I have to raise money to run this riseupwisconsin.com because it costs money to organize. And I keep saying to our side, organize, organize, organize. We're not as organized as the left. That's why they can get 2,500 protesters to show up in support of Palestine, and we can't get 250. Luckily, we can get 25. So I need your money, because I'm not independently wealthy. If I was, I would do this myself. If I was George Soros, I wouldn't ask you for a dime. I would just do it myself. But I'm not independently wealthy. I have to depend upon the generosity of folks like you. They're organized. We got office space. We got office supplies. Nobody, I don't have any paid staff. I'm basically doing this with about two or three people, and none of us are getting paid. I got to rely on volunteers, and that's okay. But it still costs money for, you know, an office space. We got to lease an office, supplies. And it's been real hard raising money. Not that it's supposed to be easy, but when it comes to the left, they can raise money at the drop of a hat. You look at Black Lives Matter, when they formed, millions came flooding in. Millions. So if you can help, I'd appreciate it, because I'm doing what I can. You know, when I say everybody can do something, I want an organized effort, Rise Up Wisconsin. But these are some of the things, you know, I'll get back to this worthy rallies for pro-Israel or in support of Israel, and you don't see them. And it's not because the media is not covering them. There are none. I think I've heard of maybe one or two nationally. And we don't, like I said, you don't have to go to Washington, D.C. Hold one in your own town. Get a flag, get your flags. You know, they got their Palestinian flags. Take your U.S. flags, take your Trump flags if you want to, and hold a rally in support of Israel. Make yourselves heard. Make yourselves known. Stop being afraid. My gosh, I get sick of this. The fear is so debilitating on our side. And the excuses. Well, I'm busy. Well, you know, we got jobs. Well, I've had it with the excuses. Like I said, the people who fought in the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, on the side of ending freedom, two world wars, Korean War, the wars in the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, remember Iraqi freedom? All those wars, people were busy. And we can't just leave, well, you know, that's the military, that's their job. It's everybody's job. And I'm not saying everybody needs to join up with the armed forces and sign up, but you know what? You can help here back home. As they're all fighting for our freedom. For instance, like when a rally's called in support of the troops or in support of this, show your rear end up. The left's never too busy. Never. They approach this as a 24/7, 365-day venture. Every day. They do their thing. We do it seasonally. Well, we're coming up upon an election. Well, it's election season. And in between, we do very little. Very little. I haven't seen any rallies either in support of Trump with all this, you know, the attacks being done by Biden and the government, the Justice Department. Where are the damn rallies in support of Donald Trump? Against the weaponization of government to go after not just Trump, but his supporters. Where are the demonstrations? Where are the protests? You got people sitting in prison because of this January 6th nonsense. Go to your federal courthouse in support of this, in support of stopping the weaponization by government. Protest works. It shows how serious you are. And you know what? It emboldens others. They go, oh man, look. I'm on that side. I'm on the side of supporting Israel. Next time they have one, I'm gonna show up. Because look at all the people there. Because you know, everybody thinks they're going to be by themselves. And then, you know, the opposition come down and crush you. And I never suggest that anybody go this alone. Don't do it. It makes no sense. Organize a critical mass of people. Go to your federal courthouse with your bullhorns and your signs. We support Israel. Because until we're willing to do this, we're always going to be on defense. I want to be on offense. counter protests, counter rallies. We don't have to show up at theirs like they're going to show up at ours. Trust me. If I called a support Israel rally in 2 weeks, I'm still contemplating it, not in 2 weeks, but the thing is, I'm not wasting my time, you know, for 62 people to show up and 100 from the other side to counter protest at my event. That's what they do. I'm not suggesting we need to go to their events and counter protest, but have your own and stand your damn ground. Stop being afraid. They're counting on that. And we're just going to keep our heads down and remain in the shadows. It's time to come out of the shadows. In support of Trump, in support of Israel, and against some of this other nonsense that the left is doing right now. Effective countermeasures. It's time. Now I want to get to another issue here that just popped up. In New York City, you know, they're having this problem on the subway, not just the subway, they're having this problem with crime. And a lot of it's their own doing with their policies. No bail, they enacted no bail. They declared, New York City declared themselves a sanctuary city. Well, they had a couple of high-profile subway incidents where riders were attacked. Excuse me. So now, you know, it's election year, so now they got to get serious. So Governor Hochul rolls out a new effort, says in this article here, a new effort to keep New Yorkers safe. This crime, violence, and disorder has been going on in New York for the last 5 years. Easily. And now they're going to do something about it? Only now? So anyway, she releases a 5-point plan. One part of the plan is deploying 750 National Guard members, 250 New York State and MTA officers, it's a Metropolitan Transit Authority, to flood the subway system. Now? You know how long this has been going on? These acts of disorder on the subway system in New York City? Does the name Daniel Penny ring a bell? He's a former Marine who got tired of being harassed on a New York subway car and went after this guy who was harassing him and other passengers in a very threatening manner and held him in a headlock, and unfortunately for the guy, he died. Daniel Penny had to take matters into his own hand because the city of New York and the state of New York wouldn't do what they're supposed to do to keep New Yorkers safe. If you recall, back when Rudy Giuliani was mayor, they had the same problems going on in New York then that are going on now. Crime, violence, and disorder. He hires Bill Bratton as his police commissioner. And he told Bratton, go out there and change this stuff. Make New York safe again. So Bratton puts together this, you know, the broken windows order maintenance program, plan, I should say. Crime reduction. Holding people accountable for acts of disorder in public spaces. Started with the subway. Pushed all those miscreants above ground. They were using the homeless, the criminals were using, the drug users were using the subway system, you know, as their compound. Pushed them all out of there. Pushed them above ground at daylight where you could see them. They were easier to spot. Issuing summonses for turnstile jumping. I mean, that's the first thing they went after. Because that's what was it. These people just come down and jump the turnstile to get in. They had it all stopped. including his predecessor, Giuliani, Mike Bloomberg, and Howard Safer, continued the policies. Remember stop, question, and frisk? Remember that? And all of this stuff led to historic lows in crime, violence, and disorder. New York City became livable again for law-abiding people. Reduced murders. They were averaging 2,200 murders a year, down below 200. This was historic. Why? Because there was a plan to fight crime, and they had all of the entities of the criminal justice system working in concert with each other, not against each other. There was no bail policies. There was certain prosecution for these goofs. Held them in jail. Repeat offenders. Stop, question, and frisk. They weren't harassing law-abiding citizens. They're harassing the criminal element. I used to tell my deputies that all the time. Harass the criminals. Leave the law-abiding people alone. And I said, if you can't identify the bad guys, then you aren't worth a damn as a law enforcement officer. If you don't know the bad guys in your beat, in your area, then you aren't worth a damn as a law enforcement officer. So Hochul comes along. They have this plan to deploy the National Guard. The National Guard, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not against deploying the National Guard against all of this crime, violence, and disorder, but she wouldn't do it during the damn riots after George Floyd. She wouldn't do it during the riots after Eric Garner. Then it was okay to let it happen. She didn't deploy the state police to stop the rioting after George Floyd. But now all of a sudden, well, let's put the National Guard in a subway system. It's funny that Bill Bratton and Howard Safer and Mayor Giuliani and Mayor Bloomberg, they could do it without asking for the National Guard. They didn't need the National Guard. They made better use of their resources. They put the cops where the disorder and crime and violence was happening. And they harassed the hell out of the criminal element and the perpetrators of disorder. Made life difficult for them. Made them go in the shadows. But since then, you know, they pull that stuff back. They tried to end. Stop, question, and frisk. They tried to end it. I mean, you had some prosecutors running for election that they were going to end NYPD's stop, question, and frisk as a policy, a crime plan. They had a written policy on it. Hochul doesn't have a policy here for how the 750 National Guard and the 250 New York State Police are going to behave. No policy. This is hastily put together. But here's the biggest problem I have with it. I think that this is overreach by the government. They're going to check bags of people entering the subway system. It's like a mini TSA. They're going to search people who they don't suspect of criminal behavior or criminal activity, and that's the problem I have with it. They're going to search their bags, their backpacks. Nobody said, at least I haven't read it so far, that the stuff happening on the New York subway system is because law-abiding people or anybody with a backpack, they're getting their weapons down there. That's not what they're doing. They're just jumping the turnstiles. So you got law-abiding citizens that are going to be harassed and coerced. It's not a voluntary search if it's under coercion. So Hochul was asked at the news conference, do people have to submit to the bag search? No, they don't have to. But then they're not getting on. That's coercion. People have to use the subway system. It's kind of like the airlines. I think the TSA and the searches they do are obnoxious, offensive, But you got to submit because you got to get on your plane to get somewhere. But that's coercion. So they're going to waste time using the National Guard to search bags, backpacks, and the like. Ain't going to lead to anything. It's not going to lead to anything. Harassing otherwise law-abiding citizens that are not suspected of criminal behavior. That's offensive to a constitutional republic, to an individual liberty and freedom. It's offensive. It's obnoxious. If they can't go down to that subway system and know who the goofballs are, then ain't worth a damn. And like I said, I'm all for deploying the National Guard. And I've been calling for some of these cities to do that. Chicago, Washington, D.C., the out-of-control crime. But all those mayors, no, we don't need the National Guard. Yeah, they need the National Guard. But you don't call the National Guard in to harass otherwise law-abiding citizens. That's obnoxious and offensive in a constitutional republic. We have constitutional rights against this sort of stuff. I mean, the courts in Stop, Question, and Frisk, they okayed these limited searches, pat-downs, under very strict guidelines. Narrowly defined. In other words, you can't just do everybody. That's not narrowly defined. And that's what's happening at airports. But we've talked about that before. Now, that's not necessary. Profile. Oh, Clark, you just said a dirty word. Profile, yeah. Don't cast a dragnet out there. And then there are pictures. There's a picture here of a table laid out in this story. And you see some ordinary-looking guy, white guy. He's got his backpack on a table, and they're going through it. That's offensive. It's a public space to ride a subway car? I don't get it. And where's the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, who I'm not fond of? But where are they? They were one of the strongest opposers of the Stop, Question, and Frisk. Where are they on this? They should have already been in court to get an injunction, ask for an immediate injunction. They haven't made the case that you need to deploy the military to search law-abiding people's property because of some of the disorder and the crime going on the New York subway system. If the New York City police can't handle this, and they've shown they could before remember, Bill Bratton and Howard Safer, they showed they could do this. But if they're saying now they can't, well, then that police commissioner should be fired yesterday. And get somebody in there who can. You got over 30,000 cops. Now, I understand it's a big city. A lot of people. But I have to question some of the deployment strategies then. And stop with all this community policing BS. Go back to crime fighting. And the police commissioner should be holding a news conference every couple of days blasting Alvin Bragg, and giving specific cases of a guy who was arrested of a long criminal history. Give his name, get his picture up there. I used to do that. I put a board behind me on an easel with 30 common criminals, repeat career criminals, dangerous ones, who've been let out on low bail or no charges issued, and call out the District Attorney John Chisholm by name. That's what the police commissioner should be doing. Standing next to that useless mayor and call these people out. Get public pressure applied to have these people change course. There's no doubt in my mind that what Hochul pulled was because the Democrats are getting hammered on the crime issue, their handling of it, or inability to handle it. Now she's going to look tough. She didn't call the National Guard out during the damn riots. This is a political move. But the politics of it is interfering with people's individual freedom and liberty to move about without unnecessary government intrusion or interference. That's what this is. So I don't have a car and I got to use the New York subway system to get to work or to school or wherever. And I don't want them searching my bag without a search warrant or without some court at least looking at this and saying, well, it's de minimis, because that's what they did with TSA. Well, it's just a de minimis search. No, it's gone into going inside your bags, for heaven's sake. You want to put a magnetometer up at the bottom of the escalator of New York City subway system? And I've ridden that thing numerous times. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think that that's offensive. Because you're not being stopped. You're just walking through. And don't set it so sensitive that it goes off because you got some loose change in your damn pocket. You know, as a ruse to be able to stop you. That, too, is offensive. I don't have a problem with some stuff. You know me. I'm as hard on criminal behavior and activity as there is in the United States. But I know how to deploy and employ effective tactics that harass criminals and not law-abiding citizens. So we'll wait. I don't know, the ACLU, maybe they're asleep at the switch for now, but I expect somebody in New York to go into court and challenge this. Challenge this as these warrantless searches are against the Constitution. And have them make the case. And I'd love for them to say, well, you know, we've had some acts of crime, violence, and disorder, and people... And then bring up Daniel Penny's name. Oh, you mean like Daniel Penny, who felt he had to do this himself because you guys wouldn't do anything about it before? Help me out on this one, folks. But, you know, again, we stand by. Again, here's another instance. Where are the protests by law-abiding citizens? Where are the protests? And we just, you know, we get the shoulder shrug. Well, you know, I guess they feel this is best for us. I guess, you know, if it keeps us safe. I'm not willing to give up my personal freedom and liberty for a little safety. Who was that said? Ben Franklin? I think it was. He who would give up personal liberties for a little safety deserves neither liberty nor safety. That's where I'm at, ladies and gentlemen. How about getting rid of the no bail policy, Governor? How about allowing law-abiding citizens to go armed with a concealed weapon, Governor? They're against that crap, too, and they set up so many hurdles, they finally got slapped down by a federal court with their, you know, the high hurdles they set up for people to be able to exercise their Second Amendment right. I think only in narrow situations should law-abiding citizens not be able to go armed under the Second Amendment in public spaces. I'm just not against that. You know, people say, well, you know, public spaces and, you know, basically what you're saying is you don't trust law-abiding people. Well, guess what? I do. Thanks for joining me, ladies and gentlemen.
When you talk about race, crime, and politics, some folks lose sleep over this, but not me, because I sleep just fine on my Giza Dream Sheets and Pillow from MyPillow, especially this new 2.0. If you haven't gotten yours yet, you are missing out. Just go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Clark, that's C-L-A-R-K-E, and save up to 66% off. The direct link is also available on my website, AmericaSheriff.com. Get a great night's sleep so we can continue the fight. Friends, I want to thank you for listening to today's episode of Straight Talk with yours truly, America Sheriff David Clark. And a special thank you also goes out to our sponsors. My goal, as always, is to break down these complex and many times controversial issues and bring it to you straight with a little dose of common sense, no media bias, no talking points, just truth. And this podcast would not be possible without your support. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite place to listen. And please share this message of common sense on social media. For more content, be sure to follow me on Truth Social, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And just a reminder, we'd love for you to join our Straight Shooters VIP podcast club for only $5 per month. And with that membership, you'll receive invitations to attend private podcast events throughout the year as a VIP guest when we come to your town. Plus, if you join today, you'll also receive a free coffee mug and a sample of our private label coffee as long as supplies last. Subscribe and join at americasheriff.com. This podcast is brought to you by americasheriff.com with executive producer Judy Wilkinson of J.L. Wilkinson Consulting and producer Josh Wentz in partnership with our friends at Bulldog Media. If you are interested in partnering with Straight Talk Podcasts or having me speak in your area, please contact Judy at jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com, 706-518-2116. That's jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com. Phone number 706-518-2116.